20% of the children you know will be molested before they're 18, and most of them will never tell. What would you give to protect their innocence? Would you give up a designer coffee, dinner out, or maybe a movie? How about a pack of cigarettes or that extra glass of wine? We're asking every adult who listens to our show to join our Give It Up for Kids program by making a small monthly donation of $5, $3, or even just a dollar a month. You can have a direct impact on the protection of children. As a nonprofit, Talk relies on the generous donations of community members just like you to sustain and expand their programs that protect kids and help survivors heal. So please do it for the kids. Visit talk.org/donate to make your pledge today. That's talk.org/donate, because we all play a part in the solution. Well, in this hour, we are going to talk about sometimes abuse is a package deal. There is the ACE study, which showed 1/3 of the population being studied experienced at least one category of childhood trauma. If any one category was experienced, there was an 87% chance that at least one additional category was present. 1 in 6 individuals in the study experienced 4 or more categories of childhood trauma, and 1 in 9 experienced 5 or more. We're going to talk today with a victim of multiple types of abuse and what that was really like, how it impacted him as an adult, and how he has triumphantly overcome his past. Mike Skinner is joining us today, and he's a nationally known award-winning advocate survivor, addressing the issues of trauma, abuse, and mental health concerns through public speaking and his music. He has spoken at the National Press Club, was a keynote speaker for a conference held in the United Nations, and the State Department and Georgetown University on the sexual exploitation and trafficking of children and adults, and he has appeared on many TV, radio, and internet shows. Michael has part of the Oprah Winfrey shows and addressed the issues of male sexually abused as children. His music and advocacy website has been visited by well over 1 million visitors. Michael has also formed the nonprofit The Surviving Spirit that offers hope, healing, and help for those impacted by trauma, abuse, and mental health through the creative arts, and his monthly newsletter. Mike, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for having me. It's great to be
here.
As
we look at the ACE study, really what we wanted to focus on is the fact that oftentimes when there is one type of abuse, there are many other types of abuse. So it's not typical for somebody to have, you know, sexual abuse and an alcoholic parent and have everything else pretty much, you know, hunky-dory in the household, right? They kind of comes in groups and there's multiple types of dysfunction. Mike is offered to share his story with us today to help us get a visual of what this might look like from the outside and also the inside, and how this multiple types of abuse kind of play out both in childhood as well as in our adult lives. So, Mike, maybe you could start by giving us kind of an overview of your family makeup and what this might have looked like from the outside, people in your you know, community.
I grew up in a working-class, middle-class neighborhood in Billerica, Massachusetts, which is a suburban town just outside of Boston and Cambridge. I was born in Boston and lived there and in Cambridge, Mass, till the age of 6, but then we moved up to Billerica. And again, that's like just 18 miles outside of the city. And again, it's working-class, middle-class. And so in our neighborhood, you know, there were carpenters, plumbers. Across the street from me was the, you know, the fire chief of the town. So, like I said, it was a mix of, you know, engineers. And my my father was a plumber maintenance man for a very large real estate company in Cambridge, Mass. It was the second largest real estate company after Harvard University. So he had a really good job. You know, his wife, my mother, was a stay-at-home mom, and she was an active member of the church. And there were 5 siblings, and I was the oldest of the 5, 4 boys and a sister who was the youngest of the group. So from the outside, it looked great. It looked like, you know, an all-American family. It was a good-looking family, et cetera, et cetera. And she was a prominent member of the church. But inside that home was anything but a good-looking family, because both parents when I say monsters, you know, they were evil in the respect that they purposely went about and set about to hurt us, but they did it with intent and with malice. They enjoyed what they did, and so there's levels of abuse that they enjoyed what they did, and this took the form of sexual, physical, emotional. There was neglect. There was a lot of psychological things that they did to mess with us, and so within that home, which again looked on the outside looked really good, was just it was a nightmare. And they also they had a group of friends that were equally as perverse and sadistic as them, and so they had no problem in passing around children from one to another. So you were passed around, and that's why I got to speak on the trafficking conference, because I was trafficked by my parents, and I can remember pictures and different things being taken. But can I give you all the details? No, because I was, you know, I blocked out too much of the dissociation. But again, from the outside looking in, it looked really good, but it was anything but. Of those five siblings, two of my brothers have committed suicide. I have a brother that has so many of the different mental health labels posted around him. I don't like the word mental illness, but that's what he's, you know, he's diagnosed as severely mentally ill. He deals with PTSD, the depression, you know, they say bipolar, but it's not, and the borderline personality disorder, et cetera, et cetera. And my other siblings have also had serious suicide attempts, as have I. So in terms of the ACE study, I haven't looked at it in a bit, but pretty much all the things that are on there, we fell under that category. But there are also categories that they don't list that, you know, there were things that my father did that were, you know, he did horrible things to other people. So there's just a lot of things that went on in that home that we were subjected to. And, yes, it did have a major impact on how it played out in our lives.
Well, thanks for that overview. You know, obviously it's a very distressful story to hear, and obviously enormously painful for you and your siblings. I'm sure. I'm so sorry to hear the story. I want people to learn from it, because sometimes I think, you know, this is terrible to say, but sometimes I think when we say somebody was sexually abused or molested, it's kind of a term that's very easy to write off.
Right.
And, you know, it's just very interesting as we look at your story that, you know, you felt that there was real intent here on the harm, and indeed sharing children amongst other families. I mean, that's significant, and it's something that I don't think we as a society necessarily really believe happens. And yet you're not the only survivor that I know that has been through this.
Exactly.
I know many, so it is something that is happening, and especially where both, you know, a mother and father are potentially involved, or multiple family members. From a standpoint of the physical abuse too, you know, I had written down kind of when we first talked that it wasn't just, and again I say just, you know, like they hit you with the back of their hand or a belt, but it really kind of almost borderline more on torture. Is that right? I mean, it was pretty severe.
I call him Dick Skinner. I don't like to call him my father, but, you know, he did, him and his wife did bring me into the world. But he used to choke me to the point of unconsciousness, and in our living room was a fireplace, and around it was the paneling, and he would literally lift me up, and, you know, because he was a strong man. I'll get to that also, what he did, his other job, hurting people. And he would be choking me to the point of unconsciousness. Then I could always remember my feet dangling. Then he'd drop me, and he'd be laughing. And for the longest time, I kept thinking, oh, this is just a dream. This is a horrible dream. But it was my siblings that would remind me of this. Remember when he used to do this to you? I'm 57, so I'm going to use the terminology that we used back then was a leg breaker. Basically, he was the muscle that if you owed a gambling debt or you owed money to a loan shark, he was the person that came to collect it. He was a big man, a very strong man. So he also would punch me in the back. I have severe back problems. My back is a mess. He, you know, he knew where to hit you. He used to kick me in the backside, driving his foot up my coccyx bone. That was to cripple me. You know, this wasn't, you know, just an alcoholic anger, or, you know, this was done with intent. And she did the same types of things. And this is how we call it, you know, fortunately she wasn't as strong as him, you know, but she used to break wooden rulers over me. And, you know, as I said, back in those days, those rulers were pretty strong, and she would keep beating me with a belt, and she wouldn't stop till she was physically spent. And again, you know when someone is enjoying this, that messes your mind up. There's no way a child and even a young teenager can fathom that and comprehend that what is this parent doing to me? So this wasn't just they were angry that you spilt the milk or whatever. You know, this was done with intent. And that's the other thing, I think, is you're talking, is trying to make this aware that, because I do get upset when it's just so much as play. And yes, there are males who are doing horrible things, but there are also females doing horrible things to children. And that also has to be brought to light on this, because it was the two of them.
Yeah. So how did you get through this as children? I mean, you and your siblings, did you, you know, band together, talk to each other? Did you just pretend it wasn't happening? I mean, you know, tell me how you guys coped when you were younger.
Well, a lot of times I stuck up for them, so I took even more of a punishment, if you will, and then we would actually band together and try to protect one another. But then as we started getting older, I used to sneak out of the house. I would stay in the woods, you know, walk the streets at night, so there'd be that. A saving grace for me was music, you know, just hearing music and listening to it and all those other things. My brother David, who committed suicide, was a year younger. He buried himself in his schoolwork, so he was, you know, so for all intents and purposes, you'd see him in school, you know, he had the straight A's, et cetera, was a very good student, you know, didn't miss a day, and yet he was a mess. He was hurting inside, and yet I was the one at the principal's office all the time because I was getting in the fights or I was skipping school. You know, I was high marks in terms of, you know, the SATs and all the rest of it, but I reacted in a different way. The others, in one sense, we were close, but we were also desperately trying to stay alive. So we were close. We used a lot of black humor to get through, but I know for myself personally, a lot of it was music and then just escaping the house.
Yeah. You know, and you were able to kind of start your music career pretty early and actually left to tour, right?
Yes. I actually started, at the age of 12, I was actually starting to play in teen centers and parties and getting paid for it. So, you know, in 14 and 15, you know, 15 years old, I was playing in nightclubs and I was getting paid for it. So I became a professional musician at a very young age, and I used to skip school to go play in nightclubs. I left school when I graduated, but as soon as I left, I was playing full time in a band, and then I did go off and tour overseas for a couple of years. And music was good for me. It kept me going, it kept me alive, and it kept me on the go. And this is when I moved to England, because I lived over there for 2 years, that was the first time I ever felt perfectly safe in my whole life, because I had this whole ocean protecting me from my parents. So,
right.
That was when I really started to really, you know, I was 21 years old and I started thinking about all of this. And again, music was good to me, you know, it kept me busy. Then I went into the business end of music. And unfortunately, as you know, the drill, you know, at the age of 39, everything came crashing back. And then I had to deal with the post-traumatic stress, depression, the dissociation, because just I couldn't keep the memories from, you know, they just kept flooding in over and over and over again. But, you know, for a good part of my life, I was able to stay sane and grounded. And during that point, I was happily married and we had 5 children. So.
And was there anything in particular that kind of triggered all the memories and everything to come flooding back, or was it just, you know, just a period of time in your life?
I think it was time to deal with it, but I had started going to adult children of alcoholics meetings,
mm-hmm.
and what had started happening is different people would start sharing about the abuse that went on in their homes, and then that would lead to more of them starting to talk about the sexual abuse. And it was opening up the can of worms, and that really opened Pandora's box, if you will.
Right, yeah. It often does when we hear somebody else's story.
So I'd go to the meeting, and I'd hear someone talk, and I'd leave the meeting. I mean, a couple of them I left because I just felt so uncomfortable. I felt bad for the people, but it felt like, you know, the fingernails going down the chalkboard.
Mm-hmm.
It was so disconcerting to me. And then I'd go back, or I'd go to another meeting, and you know how it is. Someone shares, and that gives someone else the safety and the comfort and that peer support to also share their story. So next thing I know, you've got several people sharing their sexual abuse stories, and I'm like, get me out of here. And it just, that started to spiral. That really, I think that opened up the can of worms, so to speak.
And at one point, you actually had a pretty bad anxiety attack, right, and ended up in the hospital?
Yes, it's called a nervous breakdown, whatever terminology. It was so bad. I've experienced a lot of pain in my life, you know, through the beatings that I've, you know, I've gone through a lot of stuff. Nothing compared to, it was just so intense. It just felt like my insides were on fire. My nervous system was on, if it was goes on 10, it was on 12. I felt like I was literally burning up inside. It was just so much. It hurt. It literally hurt.
Mm.
So,
yeah,
that was kind of scary. That was scary.
Yeah, well, because all of that is just stored in our bodies and our memories and everything, mm-hmm. in some way, shape, or form. So when you become very conscious of it and it starts to come back, it is very, you know, it's very painful.
Right.
During your childhood years and everything, did any of you ever call the police? Was Child Protective Services ever involved? Did anybody else, you know, did any teachers notice? I mean, tell me from the outside, did anybody notice that something was wrong?
People knew that something was wrong because at some point it would get so bad that the police would come to the house. I don't paint everyone with the same brush, but some of these cops that would come to the door were the same guys that hung out with my father and went to the, you know, to the fights, or they played cards together. And yet there was also, and that was the other thing, diagonally across from us was a lieutenant of the police force in Billerica. He didn't like my father. So I they almost came to blows a couple times, but they would come to the house, but nothing ever happened. The principal knew in school because I was always down his office because I was in a lot of fights. I had a fourth grade teacher, and later on as an adult I realized what he was doing. I probably knew on one level as a 10-year-old, but I couldn't tell him. And he took a real active interest in me and asking all kinds of questions. And this was, I've shared this with friends how he then said, well, why don't you stay after school and help me with some work? And first his partner, and I'll pay you. And I was all excited, you know, as a kid thinking, oh, he's going to pay. But then there's the other shoe I'm thinking is going to drop, or he's just going to use me. But he didn't. He was real, you know, he had me do some work. He gave me some money to buy some comic books and a soda and a candy bar. And he just kept asking me questions because there really wasn't that much work for me to do. And it was more like a talking session. And this would go on, and then he'd drive me to the house, and I'd run into the house, and I'd run to the picture window, but I'd crouch down, and I'd look behind the shades, and I would look out behind these curtains, and I could see him just sitting out there in his car, and he was just looking at the house, and he'd sit out there. It seemed like forever. It was probably 5 minutes. It seemed like eternity, but he would just look at the house, and he'd always ask me questions about my mother and father, and so I suspect he knew something, but I was too afraid to tell him anything.
And the same thing with your brothers and sisters, as far as you know, nobody ever really...
Well, I remember the family doctor, I just overheard it in conversation with a nurse or something, saying, you know, the father and the mother have to lighten up, they have to stop being so abusive, you know, to my brother Wayne, because he was wetting his bed and all those other things that go on. So people knew, but nothing was being done.
And I know that was... You know, many, many years ago, and we certainly have progressed since then, but,
mm-hmm.
You know, we really need our pediatricians and doctors and neighbors and law enforcement and everything to step up and really begin to recognize these, you know, these issues and put them together. I mean, I think we're so much better off than we were, but there's still room for improvement.
Right.
Because I still, you know, have adult survivors that I talk with that are... younger, but, you know, I mean, they're adults, but they're still younger. I mean, they're in their 20s, and, you know, we're still seeing things similar to this where, you know, doctors and so forth weren't picking up on things. Now, if your father was, your father was kind of friends with these police officers and so forth?
With some of them, and that was part of the the story. His circle of friends, some of them were cops, but they were the bad cops. And again, I have friends that are cops that are good guys, but one of his best friends was a cop that was thrown off the force back then, and he was a cop in Somerville or Boston, and he was thrown off for brutality. And can I say it was him? But I remember one of the people that used to abuse me used handcuffs on me. So, and this is where it's hard for someone like me to go to the police because I was deathly afraid of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, how, you know, so what kind of message was that sending? And again, that's why I'm prefacing this with I have friends that are caught. I know policemen, there's good people, but you know, if you're a child or a young teenager and you've been abused by the member of the community, you know, this is why there has to be more awareness. There has to be the signs out there that, you know, talk to someone, reach out. There has to be more of a public outreach on this.
Right, right. And as far as you know, what about your parents' background? I mean, do you know if they were abused as children, either, you know, physically or emotionally or sexually?
Yes, all of the above. He came from, you know, the wrong side of the tracks. He was, you know, back then, of course, you know, his mother had become pregnant out of wedlock. He was given up. Then she tried to get him back later. So his life was hard. There was no doubt about it. His life was hard. She came from the good side of the track. She came from a very wealthy town up here in New Hampshire, and her father was an outstanding member of the community, a, you know, World War One Marine hero, all kinds of medals, et cetera, et cetera. But he was horrible. He too was brutal. So both parents, yes, they came from horrific backgrounds. But so on that level, I understand, but that gave them no right to do it because they were also given five beautiful gifts. You know, their children, we were good kids. They could have broken the cycle. They chose not to.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't say that as if that is an excuse by any means for their behavior. But I ask because I really, you know, I want the audience to understand how important it is both as adult survivors to get help so that we can ensure that we break the cycle and
right.
we don't continue to abuse our kids. And we may not choose to sexually abuse or even physically abuse, but it's still abusive if we're just alcoholics or we're depressed all the time or angry or, you know, those other things are still not good, right, for our children. So
well,
we need
myself,
to get the help that we need.
Exactly. I was fortunate. I didn't go down the substance abuse route, but my addiction was workaholism. So I provided for my family. You know, my ex was a, you know, stay-at-home mom with five kids, so but, yeah, I worked too much. I was gone all the time because that was my only self-worth. So I had to keep running. So, yes, I wish I had known what I know now back in my early 20s, and I could have treated things differently. You're right. So
yeah, absolutely. And it was interesting when you said you were just running. I always talk with survivors about the fact that I was also a workaholic and kind of still am, unfortunately,
yeah.
But for better reasons at least this time.
Right.
you know, it's hard sometimes for survivors to be alone with their thoughts.
Yes.
You know, we just have to stay busy so that we don't have to go there. And
exactly.
And that can be, you know, quite a challenge. So, you know, obviously this has impacted you, you know, significantly. You talked about the fact that you were married, but we only have another minute left, but that did, my understanding is that you're no longer married. And, you know, it impacted your career significantly. And, I mean, it's tough, both the way it impacts us as children, but also as adults. And, you know, when we talk about breaking the cycle, you know, one of the things that we need to do as a society, as a community is, you know, we're not only encouraging adult survivors to come forward, but we need to really focus on helping children get the help
Correct.
They need early so that they can break the cycle as well. You know, before it's even their choice, we need to help them.
I agree, and because the more education and outreach and awareness there is, you know, if we really started reaching more people, we'd cut down the divorce rate, because where does it also impact us? It impacts us, the trauma and abuse that we experience, it impacts every relationship that we have, and it doesn't have to be of an intimate nature. You know, if we think of friends, working, because we're always staying busy, we can't be close to other people. So, yeah, the more we learn and know about this, the better the lives of everyone will be.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Mike, we've got to wrap up. I thank you so much for sharing your story, and I know, you know, it's very deep and very painful and very personal. And for you to share this with our audience is just, it's a blessing for us, because, you know, I just believe so much that we have so much to learn from every story that a survivor is willing to share.
I agree, and thanks, and I'm honored to be a part of this.
Well, have a great rest of your day as we go on to the next phase in our talkathon.
Alrighty.
Into the evening hours. We'll be looking to keep in touch with you and see how things continue to progress in your advocacy work down the road.
All righty. Take care.
Thanks, Mike. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Since 19... 19-